the Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Great Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast from a hotel room in sunny, breezy Newcastle on Tyneside. My name's Ian Higgins. I'm joined by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards in the same room. Boys, welcome. Australia have just won the first Ashes Test match. 5-0 on the cards, like we always called for months and months and months. Welcome.
Thanks to you guys.
Great to be here.
Glenn McGrath said it could be 11-0 if you take into account previous series as well. And I share that confidence immediately. Yeah, and let's set the scene a little bit. I mean, it's great to be in the same room together. We're a little bit foggy from jet lag.
Yeah, we've been here 2 nights now, Pez, you and I, and he goes, you've been here 3 nights, so you're probably a little bit more acclimatized. I've probably had 8 hours sleep aggregate.
Cumulatively.
But let's set the scene. I mean, let's look at the room. We're actually sharing this room tonight. Three men in their early to mid-30s. And we're in Newcastle and we're sharing a room.
And it's a room that overlooks a wonderful cricket ground as well, where we're performing tonight. And we did come into this room and we just stopped and took a... This happens quite a lot with the grade cricketer, three clubmen who played Sydney grade cricket, 2001 to 2006 inclusive, and a little bit beyond. And we just thought, what has it come to this, as Mike Skinner said? How and why and all of those things. And that's what our tour of the UK have been so far. There's already been some pretty loose offerings from us and some pretty loose experiences. But we're going to go through that and talk about the Ashes as well.
Well, we appreciate people coming to the Birmingham show last night. And we've got Leeds and Manchester coming up after Newcastle tonight. But let's get into the actual cricket that was played, which people are listening about. They care about the cricket that was played. Australia have won. May I remind you that it was 8 for 120 Australia were, or
let us never forget that.
Let us never forget that. I mean, this is possibly in the pantheon of one of the greatest all-time comebacks in Australian cricketing history. Is that an overstatement?
I don't think so. People are starting to compare it to Pune 2017, of course, where Steve O'Keefe, friend of the show, took 12 for 70. It's been compared to amazing Adelaide. I think it supersedes that comfortably.
Yes.
Very comfortably. I mean, given Australia's struggles in England, given that Australia hasn't won a match at Edgbaston since Sale of the Century was on TV, since Sven-Göran Eriksson was manager of the England football side since September 11.
The conspiracy that
what
was.
What year was that?
Exactly. This has to be the best, I think, of this century.
It's so big, Piers. And just so good to see Steve Smith back. And what a return it was. I mean, this was the Steve Smith show, in all essence. And he is back in love with cricket. He fell out of love.
He said he fell out of love with cricket. With cricket. The Jonathan Agnew of TMS after the game. So he fell out of love. But now he's back in love with cricket.
For a brief period.
And I don't actually believe he was ever out of love with cricket.
It could be like when you break up with someone and then you get back together and it's just stronger. It's better because you've gone through that. Or how did he fall back in love with cricket?
Maybe he was leaving balls outside in his hotel room. I can't speak for a second. But like, I mean, some of the eccentricities were there, the twitches, the ticks, they were all there.
Beautiful ticks.
He was even hit in the head by Ben Stokes in the first innings and then just kind of like just shook it off as if he'd just woken up from a cold shower. Incredible stuff. I mean, but I mean, at the same time, whilst we celebrate Steve Smith's success, is also the other story is that England were down a bowler after four overs because Jimmy Anderson played himself.
Couple of parentheses that we need to throw in for this victory.
Caveats.
For Australia. England did lose their best bowler after the 37-year-old decided to play himself leading into the game.
Against instruction, apparently.
Against instruction.
What's what good cricketers go, though? Overrule science.
Yeah.
I mean, DRS, don't believe in it. Climate change, what's that?
Yeah.
Am I injured? Fuck it.
Gonna
play.
He's a flat earther, no doubt, Jimmy Anderson. So they had that. Moeen Ali wasn't at his best.
No. He wasn't at his second best, Moeen.
Yeah, well, I think he is second best. You know, he's a second spinner, Moeen, is he? We were there yesterday at Edgbaston.
Yeah.
This incredible situation. It took Australia, despite those things, but despite winning the toss, losing Anderson, Steve Smith playing probably his greatest match in his career, which is saying something.
Yes.
It took, I think Wooey said this the other day, and I always agree with Wooey, especially on the Sun Yang stuff.
Yep.
I'm serious. took them until day four to get on top, but they did get on top, and England made some bizarre decisions in relation to their bowling changes. I mean, this was a Australia were only 30-odd in front, etc. Travis Head had just been dismissed, and they decided to, with Matthew Wade coming in, coming back into the test side, to bowl part-timers plus Moeen. No Wokes to be seen, no Broad. Next thing you know, Australia's made 500 and the match is theirs.
Pez and Eddowes, England are knackered. They are knackered after the World Cup. Right. I actually heard Michael Vaughan saying this similar thing, which is what I was saying a couple of weeks ago. Like, I don't see how you can have the series of your fucking career, of your life, building up to for 4 years' time. And then just like, imagine celebrating, imagine the circuit going out and the way they won it. The like the weight of the world off their shoulders, like the emotional stress, they won the game. And then like they celebrate. And then having to go back to training for an Ireland test match. And then there's like this fucking massive Ashes test match. Like, it's exhausting. And they were so far ahead of the test match. And going into day four, Travis Head gets out Australia with a you know,
slender lead.
Slender 110 run lead. Anything could have happened. Joe Denley bowls 10 overs on the spin. What? No, they just cooked. They've already resigned to never getting Steve Smith out.
No.
Like England are knackered.
I mean, is
that an excuse? I'm sorry. I mean, the ECB, the ICC create this schedule. Are we to excuse England's performance? I mean, they have created this season for it to be like the crowning moment of their 120-year history.
Yeah.
You know, this was about winning the World Cup and the Ashes, which they may still do. They knew what they were getting themselves into.
Yes.
And, you know, they have run into, you know, the BSB, Best Since Bradman, who's obviously, as we said, out to compensate for the time that he spent off, and I worry for opposition sides in relation to that. Fell out of love briefly, now he's back. I have noticed that the narrative already with some of the tabloid press and some of the English cricket writers is that, like, let's excuse this one. The emotional resilience is low at the moment. They'll come back into it, etc. But they created this challenge for themselves.
Can they come back from this, though? I mean, this is just the worst possible thing that could have happened to England. It, like, literally everything went wrong for them in this first test, and everything went right for Australia. And it was delicious. And we'd craved this for so long. And aren't we feasting?
Emotionally so.
Eddowes, if I said to you, what would be the perfect scenario for Australia to win this test match? What would be some of those things that needed to happen?
Well, you know, obviously we would need to stare directly into the jaws of defeat, which we did on day one. Then, you know, we would have to mercilessly attack a part-timer who was over-bowled, which happened.
I always want that as part of my victories.
And then us, the grade cricketer, would need to arrive on the day where we literally change everything and just dominate the entire day. And that happened on day four. And then on day five, just turn up and roll them.
Steve Smith, 200s in each innings.
140 each time. England's best ever bowler needed to not play after four overs bowled. That also happened.
And, the booing was subsiding, as, you know, in
They've
front of our
it.
Eyes. They've stopped it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just to recap, England lose Anderson. Smith gets back-to-back hundreds. Lyon takes, what did he get, 10 for in the end? Close to 9.
Wade comes back in, gets
Wade
a ton.
Wade hits a ton. And Australia win by 250 runs at the fortress that, you know, is not even the top 15 most intimidating grounds, according to the Australian captain, Tim Payne.
He said in the press conference afterwards that he was sort of poking the bear, but he was having a bit of fun.
Yeah.
There's no doubt what he said.
And then he said, you know, when we were 122 for 8, were you a bit worried? He said, oh, no, not really. Yeah. Not really.
Just stick to the game plan, really. We'll just stick to it.
Yeah. He said, I was not overly worried. Yeah. It's a different categorization of worry.
Why can't professional players just say, you know what? It wasn't going great. We were
absolutely
nervous.
Fucking Packingham, mate.
We were nervous about, you know, having a show on day four of the test match at the end of the, you know, so let's insert ourselves into the story again.
Of course.
But
that's
like,
what you do now in cricket.
Why can't they just say, just like, no, we, you know, fucked it. You know, like Joe Root was asked a question just like, you know, do you worry about like Steve Smith in the, you know, for this series? And he's like, well, he's going to have to start again at Lords. Yes, he will.
Should you have played Anderson? Everything is easy with hindsight, isn't it? It's fucking easy. That's what this podcast is all about.
So an incredible result for Australia. Everything went right. And we move on to Lords, where everyone's now predicting that there'll be a raging green seamer because England can't win any other way, which is just an incredible turnaround.
But, mate, no one can bat. And this is the sort of thing, like, Steve Smith is just clearly the difference between... Well, I'd say Steve Smith and Nathan Lyon compared to Moeen Ali. They're the two clear differences.
Smith versus Denley at number four.
Mate, exactly. And like... I hadn't realised like how bad England's situation with batting is. I mean, Rory Burns scored 100 in the first innings, but like he's basically left-handed Smith, so yeah. no one's scoring good-looking runs, which is a huge issue.
That's the greatest compliment he'll ever get in his life, the left-handed Smith.
He's basically Bradman, but left-handed.
Yeah. I'm telling you, Bradman would average 400 if he was left-handed because it's cheating. They're going to pair a green seamer, but like... Two things. First of all, like this is kind of hiding the fact that Australia were 120 for eight, even though we've already mentioned at the very top of the show. It's just like there are still huge issues. Like Warner, again, struggled in England. Still, he's only hit 250s. Is that right, Pez?
Warner hit a bunch of 50s in the last series. Each test. He's never gone beyond that.
Okay.
But yeah, he looks like he's got technical issues there. You're right. It wasn't just 100. It wasn't just 122 for eight. Australia was behind in the match a couple of other times after that. England led by 90 on the first innings. They couldn't get Wokes and Broad out either. And then they were still three for not many. Khawaja scored some important second innings runs to erase the deficit, 40. Yeah. But
Siddle, don't forget Siddle as well.
Yeah, Siddle some runs. Stepped up. They were still three for not many. So, England were up against it. Smith had an absolute worldie. The thing is, you sort of go... Maybe Smith play better than that? And you sort of, because statistically, you shouldn't really hit 140 in two innings. It doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. But then you look at Smith and you're like, the dude is making up for lost time. Mm-hmm. He could just be getting started. Mm-hmm. And like the mood here in England is like, I hate the way this guy bats. Mm-hmm. He frustrates me. Everything looks terrible about him. But I don't think we're ever going to get him out. Yeah. They're depressed already about him.
Do you remember watching Pujara bat at the MCG and the SCG on drop-in pitches? Well, the SCG is not a drop-in pitch yet.
Gillen.
Alan Jones.
Side-mouth the shit out of that just for a second. They have to put up with that. Are you enjoying watching Steve Smith bat? What I want to ask you is, we're watching him bat yesterday, right? Mm. And, like, you can see, like, the physics going on as he's watching the ball. It's fucking numbers
the
and shapes. Yeah, it's weird, right?
I used to feel that way about Steve Smith. Like, I didn't enjoy watching him, but now, everything has changed and he's our national saviour and he's fucking humiliating England on their own home soil and I'm here in England to experience that.
Yep.
I fucking love Steve Smith. Mm-hmm. I'm watching Rob Belinda 2 highlights of early Steve Smith innings from the 90s, mid-2000s, I should say.
Yeah.
And just a newfound appreciation for him because, fuck, we didn't have him for a while and we really missed him.
Exactly. Haven't we craved a saviour in Australia for quite some time? Mm. I mean, we've really been disoriented as a nation,
identity-wise,
since Farlap and then since probably 1999.
Yep.
Probably this century we felt disoriented, if we're being honest with ourselves.
Yeah,
and then we went to Edgbaston yesterday and I haven't felt safety like that.
No.
Just internally, emotional safety, as I did when I was watching Smith crab across his crease and wave that wand around in a way that I will argue is quite symmetrical. People laugh at it, but if you actually look, he's drawing circles around the ball. Mm. He knows what he's doing. He creates an environment within himself where that it's Matrix-esque.
Yeah, he's the way completing that he the sequence ball. Around the ball and then he's putting the full stop on the sequence.
Yeah, and ordinarily, right, because... We'll talk different, at a different time about the evolution of the Australian side and now it's a Colts and stuff like that. Yeah. Ordinarily, the way Smith bat is something that, as a grade cricketer, you'll just say, like, man, that is just yuck. There's nothing more yuck than the way you bat. But the deep nerdishness and obsession that he has to batting is just something we have needed. We haven't been able to score runs for a long time. It feels so great to just have someone that is so committed to the art of batting for his nation. Yep. Bradman always said when he scored runs, he did it for the country, which confirmed him as a liar.
He's a liar.
Mm. But we've now got somebody again who we just know when he walks out, he's going to score runs.
But it can't, we talk about the right kind of runs, and we've always talked about that. And it's not just, about hitting runs, but hitting them the right way. You've got to look good. Aesthetics mean everything in, modern society, and particularly in cricket. But now we just need runs. Mm. And Steve Smith's providing runs. I don't care how they look. Aesthetics don't mean as much as they used to. And he's fucking making English people wince with every shot and every extravagant leave that he's doing. Daggers through English hearts.
We're in a doesn't matter how you get him economy.
Yeah.
At the moment, we're honest with ourselves.
Exactly.
And Steve Smith is the wizard of that.
I don't want to see how you get them. I don't want to peek behind the curtains and see how this is all put together. I don't want to go into the Bangladeshi sweatshops and see how this material is made. Mm. I just want to fucking buy that Nike shit. For cost price.
Mm. So Steve Smith is Enron, essentially. We don't know where the funds are coming from as long as they're coming through. Mm. I mean, Bradman brought Australia through the Great Depression. you know, what's Steve Smith bringing us through? Sandpaper? He's like, he's come full circle. You know, he allegedly created the environment.
Well, house prices are going down, so he's bringing us through the downturn in property.
Okay.
Sport is the opiate of the masses. For me, it's about the lack of meaningful climate change action.
Okay.
Meaningful climate change action. Yeah. He briefly allows you just to switch off and escape from that while you just watch him crab across the crease.
Yeah. Yep.
Don't have to worry about the earth dying, etc. We're here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hot, isn't it?
So it's a distraction.
Yeah.
It's a distraction from the world's realities.
We spoke about, the right kind of runs, and we often speak about that in this podcast.
And off the podcast.
And off the podcast individually and collectively. You know, Matthew Wade was criticised for not scoring the right kind of runs. You say, there's no point scoring runs at six. You know, unless you get picked in the stride and you score 100 at six in the third innings of a test match.
Who would have thought that you could actually score 100 at six?
Yeah.
I mean, Australian cricket has been doing it for fucking centuries.
Yeah. Well, it's been a minute since someone for Australia you scored 100, let alone someone at six. We've had some sixes over the years. Six, I think like early Ponting, early Clark, the greats, and Martin Batterman from the Marcus North.
It was the apprenticeship number for three. You do your apprenticeship at number six, you score a couple of hundreds, then you get up to three.
Yep.
Not saying that Matt Wade's going to be three for Australia, though if Uzi doesn't score many runs, am I looking too far ahead there? Let's just enjoy Wade at six.
Six is an apprenticeship, isn't it?
I want to
go deeper with that.
There's a problem with like Australian cricket generally for us, because we've spoken about we were the winners of sandpaper, collectively as a business model.
There weren't too many winners out of sandpaper. We were one.
Yeah. But now, like, Australia and nice guys, the earthing stuff, the cult, all that sort of thing. But also now they're picking guys based on like who has scored runs in Shield cricket and they succeed. Now, this is an issue because this makes sense.
Yeah.
This is an issue for us.
Yep.
It's starting to look a little bit logical.
Sensical.
Sensical, logical. We're starting to go back to things that used to work. We're getting guys from the systems that have served us well through the last century.
I'm a bit concerned about a meritocracy. I don't know if that's the right way for Australian cricket to go.
And they've toured with a pack of bowlers who can do a job. Peter Siddle is a selection that they've groomed for a period of time who's going to do well in England. You know, Pattinson's back in the squad as well. Now we've got Hazelwood.
Horses for courses. They're respecting conditions. Yeah. They understand that you can't just overlay Australian alpha aggression to every element of cricket.
Exactly.
You can't go to India and bowl 140Ks and succeed anymore. We must adapt and respect other nations.
Yeah, I mean, they're using a combination of feel and data-driven analysis to inform selections, which is really strange and unusual.
This is what Steve Smith allows us to do. We're 120-8. Staring down the barrel of losing 5-0.
We had a really
back-to-back hundreds, and now we're saying that the Australian nation is back on track economically. Climate policy, we don't have to worry about that anymore.
House prices are going back up again.
Prices are up. That's right.
The Australian dollar's down, though. Let me tell you, being spending a couple of days.
Good we're getting paid pounds.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk collectively about the Ashes as a whole.
Okay.
In that, I think, like, I mean, we spoke before the test match. I think Australia can fucking win the Ashes. And I thought, I said, like, there was a world where Australia can go to Lords and be 2-0 up. Australia's got a great record there. Yeah. I mean, who knows if that happens. There's still some flaws in the Australian lineup. But, like, look at the squads. And now Mark Wood is out. James Anderson, that calf ain't getting fixed in the next couple of days. Like,
we're going to start throwing the ball at it. Because he's Achilles. And, he was dipped into the water. And that's his Achilles heel, his calf. Fucking attack it. Be attack dogs.
So, but I look at the squads, lads, and I think both teams' batting struggles massively. I think England are still coming down for this emotional strain of winning the World Cup the way they did. And I just think Australia's
emotional
squad,
strain from winning the World Cup the way they did.
No,
it must hurt.
I mean, like, Australia lost their series immediately after winning 2015 World Cup. India lost their series after the 2011 World Cup. There's definitely a thread here that, like, it happens. That, like, winning the World Cup in a cycle where you put everything into it, there does seem to be a thread happening where, like, it is hard to bounce back immediately afterwards. Anyway, I just think like Australia's squad. Nice, Siri.
Siri's now talking about hitting a boundary. He went for six. I didn't get it.
Australia's squad is better than England's squad.
Yeah,
I think. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's just cricket's just a great game for like the last thing that happens is therefore the thing that happens.
I knew everything.
Yeah, exactly. Langer had it right all along.
Name of the show.
Look, I don't know. I just think we are just so lucky to have Steve Smith in the side, and that without him, everything changes and the entire balance.
I mean,
of
I wake
our
up every morning and I thank God for every breath I take.
The POD song.
That that's just what I do. Okay. About Steve Smith being in the Australian side again. It's beautiful.
Just quickly, at the small risk of inserting ourselves into the story. We did. We had a special opportunity yesterday to go onto BBC TMS and all the assorted happenings in and around that. We had a good opportunity to go into the green room beforehand with a few
salubrious green room
test players and a few funny incidents. We'd heard from one player, it's an interesting insight. One ex player talking about Smith, just saying, the problem with this is that we actually want Test cricket to be shit, because when everyone's shit at Test cricket, we can sledge them for it and that's exciting. But when people play proper Test cricket, that's when you go, fuck, this game's boring.
There's 5 days, are there?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. 5 days of this because they played properly.
Yeah.
I wish they'd said that on air, but obviously you can't.
They never say the things that, they really want to say. Mm. Unless it's an Ireland Test match, of course. That was 4 days for some reason. Nothing like adapting the rules as it fits your needs. I suppose we should mention that we were in the Holly Stand yesterday. We should speak about the experience of actually being in the ground and stuff.
Suppose
now, our experience traditionally has been in Melbourne and Sydney, where we're from. Obviously, I think we've all probably been to Lords, as many Australians have over the years. Very different experience of being at Edgbaston and the Holly Stand specifically. Yeah. You want to say some words about what that environment is like? The Tim Payne.
Say some words. Put some words together.
I mean, you brought up the Australian stadium experience, and it's an increasingly sterile corporate-driven match day experience in Australia.
Modern stadia.
Stadia in general, and you walk around and you see blokes in pastel blue shirts talking about which private school they went to in Sydney. And that's just what you do at the SCG. But, the Holly Stand yesterday, we went up there and we stood up there right amongst it. Didn't announce that we were Australian, but we stood up there at the back there next to some real lager lads chanting. And the way that English people sing in unison is just something that we as Australians can never match. Yeah, the sound that emanated and the acoustics of the Holy Stand, there was a fucking good vibe there.
Yeah, it's fucking good.
It's really good.
It's really good. There's actually no point sledging it. It's actually, I'm envious of the atmosphere that can generate behind the team. It's incredible. The unison that the pack mentality can have in a good way, is amazing.
Top 15 at least.
I think we'll get to those comments, but I totally agree, and I think that the English people would, by and large, we were there when the Holly Stand was probably at its quietest over the 5 days, because Wade and Smith were just smashing them everywhere.
That's right. Smashing Joe Denley for fours for fun.
Exactly. Wade was bringing up his 100 by reverse sweeping for four. But even so, you can just look around and see guys in this kind of really tinny kind of stand that has great acoustics, just making their own fun. Some will stand up and start singing a song. People will join in. All of a sudden, there's a trumpet. All of a sudden, we're singing Rule Britannia, because it's just a really beautiful melody to it, as horrific as the lyrics are.
We don't actually believe any of that. Yeah.
Britannia ruled the waves and caused a whole bunch of problems that many people are still trying to get over today. Yeah. But it's a good melody to the song.
It's a catchy tune.
Yeah, really catchy tune. And you have to hand it to the Holy Stand. I think it's great. It is really fun.
So Australia 5-0?
Australia 11-0. 11-0. It would appear. But just on Payne's comments, the thing was, he did get the Birmingham faithful offside by kind of being miffed at the notion that Edgbaston was really intimidating. And you could see through his press conference comments, this wasn't calculated. It wasn't alpha reflex. It's not in the top 15. Said it out the side of his mouth, had one eye on the person who asked the question, but then the other eye looking away.
But I think he'll claim it as calculated.
He will now, obviously, in retrospect. It wasn't when he was out for five, pulling to take the score to six for nothing. But then you think, are you really going to get triggered by the suggestion that your ground isn't intimidating? I mean, it's cricket, isn't it? It's not fucking Galatasaray. It's not Turkish football. It's guys dressed up as the Pope and 1966 World Cup side singing about lager and, old
It's funny, if anything. There's nothing hostile or intimidating about that, I wouldn't have thought.
But they did get upset, and they were sort of trying to ride him and put pressure on him and all that kind of stuff. But, guys, it's cricket. There's nothing intimidating about it.
I can think of 15 grounds in Western Sydney that are more intimidating than that, because someone's trying to sell you ice in the car park.
Actually happened. State contractor player.
I love captains using revisionism, Faf du Plessis when in the World Cup, when he said Imran Tahir was going to bowl the first over in the World Cup to Jason Roy, who didn't fancy spin. Or Johnny Bairstow got him out first ball. He's like, I planned that 3 years ago, or whatever it was. Great stuff.
It's like when Siri said, didn't even get it.
All right. Now, the plan is that we're trying to get Marcus North onto the show, who has confirmed, apparently. So, Marcus, we're going
to
hear
We should be able to get Marcus North. We should be able to have this conversation with him in Newcastle, overlooking a club cricket ground. But it's a timing thing. So, if you don't hear him, then something didn't work out, which wouldn't be the first thing on this tour.
Australia 11-0. All right, Marcus North, and then hashtag AskTGC.
Kat actually wrote a three-part fan fiction series a few years ago entitled The Choke, which looked at the fallout from the dressing room altercation between yourself and Michael Clark. And clearly this incident split the team into two lines, you know, much like Christos Tsiolkos' novel The Slap. Can I send that to you for feedback? Because I think you'll like it.
I think you've just got good feedback, haven't you?
Fan fiction.
Fellas, I'm extremely pleased to announce, after a lot of teasing, you could say there's been a bit of teaser horse behaviour, a bit of fluff on this front, but pleased to announce that in the next 24 to 48 hours, the Grey Cricketer all-time alpha pair of Budgie Smugglers will be available via the Budgie Smuggler website.
Normal stuff.
Normal stuff to emanate from a Twitter account that started in 2012. Here we are. So you can get these via the Budgie Smuggler website. Let's just go through what's on these smugglers again. So it's celebrating the alphas of cricket as it stands, I should say. So you'll see Viv Richards with a cigar. You'll see Alex Carey with bandage around his head. You'll see texts of Michael Clark writing to Gerard Waitley, or should I say Gerald Wheatley, on one part of this patchwork quilt design that is endlessly repeating.
Merv Hughes' eyes are there. I think Dennis Lilly sunning himself at the mansion that he brought off the proceeds of laying a bet against Australia in the 1981 Ashes series. Just a lot of good moments. All the great moments.
$65. So the regular smugglers are $55. And so listeners will just be overjoyed to hear that they're more than 55. Overjoyed. Generally,
but it's just alpha, but it's an alpha to price put 10 point. Bucks on. It's alpha.
I should say, we got this design turned around extremely quickly. Budgie Smuggler are great to work with. You can if you want custom smugglers for yourself, you can just literally jump onto their website. You upload a design. It doesn't require any particularly like strange files or like stuff that requires, you know, knowledge of Adobe Illustrator. Obviously, a design looking good helps. But, you know, if you want to put it on a PowerPoint presentation, as we may or may not have done, they can turn that around and make it work. Very easy to get your own custom smugglers. You go to budgiesmuggler.com.au, all-time alpha smugglers, $65 with all of the those things there that we said earlier. budgiesmuggler.com.au. Well, we have the distinct pleasure on this cast of speaking on this beautiful, dappled, lit evening in Newcastle to wonderful first-class and test player Marcus North. I just want to regale you with some numbers here. 21 tests for his country, 1,171 runs, high score of 128, 450s, 5 tons. That's a good conversion rate. First-class numbers are staggering. 214 matches, 13,764 runs, high score of 239 not out, averaging over 40, 69 50s, and 37 tons. It's actually quite off-putting because the man sitting next to me, he's just actually looking over my shoulder at his own stats. 158 first-class wickets, has his name on the Lord's Honours Board after taking 6 for 55 against Pakistan. Apparently they call him the Snorkel. Marcus North, hello.
G'day, boys. How are you? The Snorkel, I like it. Straight in there.
I'm sure you do. isn't this nice, though? We're at the Jesmond Cricket Ground, home of Newcastle Cricket Club. We're about to do an event for the club. You just look wonderful. Why'd you agree to do this?
Oh, I was trying to help out a few friends, and then, you know, you guys have been a group of guys that I've followed on Twitter, which has been, you know, giving me great humour over the last couple of years. So nice to finally meet you guys and hopefully have a bit of fun tonight. I'm sure I'll cop a bit, but that's okay.
There might be a little bit. You know, answer the question that's on all of our lips. Compare club cricket in Australia to club cricket in England, socially and technically.
You got to give me some warning for that one. Sorry. Jeez. Look, to be fair, they are very different. There's a different way of the club system. Obviously, Australia, you've got club sides which have got 4, 5, 6 teams. Some of them have a massive social scene. As you guys continue to talk about, there's a lot of politics and selection, training, etc., etc. Here, it's very much so. If you're a member of the club, you're kind of in your play, and you have a few pints at the end of the weekend. So it's completely different. Do they train here? No, they don't really train. Where if in Australia you don't train, they get picked.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's slightly different, but it's still good fun though. It's still good fun over here.
something that's comforting to me about this ground was learning that directly behind Lawn there's a cemetery. You know, in grade cricket, a lot of dreams die at cricket grounds. There's a lot of dead blokes just behind Long On.
Mate, I tell you what, this ground here has got a reputation of a few bowlers going to their grave early. The boundary's tiny. It's known to be an absolute flat wicket. Give you a bit of history on the ground. This is the Minor Counties, home of Northumberland Minor Counties, but it's also, you'll see guys when you go in, there's a lot of Australian touring and international touring sides have played matches here over the years. You're talking like 70s, 80s, 60s. So there's some legends that have walked on this hallowed turf at Jesmond.
And now here we are as well. Marcus, I want to know, like, obviously there's batting in the news across the world at the moment. You know, Australia and England's technically quite weak batting lineups, except for Steve Smith, who's obviously amazing. You're a guy who's done well in Australia and the UK against the Kookaburra, against the Duke's ball. You know, it is a bit of a serious question, but, like, I mean, is there a massive difference between facing the two?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm. You know, the Kookaburra balls doesn't really do a lot.
No.
Let's not kid ourselves.
So it's easier in Australia, basically.
I wouldn't say easier. It's slightly different. Duke's ball is, I think, it's probably the best ball in Test cricket. Mm. I don't know how it'd go in Australian conditions. It's certainly pretty good over here. It tends to swing most of the time, but no, I think Kookaburra ball is the one I'd rather face.
Well, at the tea break, Pez and I actually walked out onto the field, took our shoes off, did a bit of earthing, lay on the ground. People were going, what the fuck are these blokes up to?
Changed my mind about it as well.
Fantastic. The electrons are still coursing through my body right now. But there was, you know, the ball was there, so we had a look at the match ball, we felt it, and there was also a box of balls, Duke's balls, which we fondled and got to know. Yeah. First time I've touched a Duke's ball, feels pretty fucking good.
It's just a comment. let's, because we don't take up too much of your time here, Marcus. It's been a historic day for Australia. You're obviously a test player, an ex-test player living in England. I mean, what did you make of Australia's victory? Has this turned the series on its head? Do Australia become favourites now? Can England come back?
Oh, I'm not going to get too ahead of ourselves.
So 5-0?
It's like 11-0 earlier.
Don't get me wrong, I'm bloody happy. Obviously, I work in English cricket now with Durham as director of cricket there. And
the guy, you can't say much.
Can't say too much,
reasons,
but I did get some pleasure this afternoon. So we had some optional training. Mark Wood's injured at the moment, but he was in seeing the physio. And I knew he was in the change room, so I kind of ran in overly excited. And he saw me straight away and he just looked at me and went, fuck off, Northie. I don't want to talk to you. So, yeah, a great start for the boys. Hey, Lords is normally a pretty good hunting ground for us too, so... Mm. 2-0 up. Ooh, gee, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Are you just saying that to segue into your 6-55 at Lords, which is on the honours board against Pakistan?
Yeah, not quite. Six, how many legit? I don't know.
Okay. Well, the slope would have accounted for five of them, obviously.
No, I had a couple of half-trackers that kind of got some wickets, which I was happy about. But no, can't take it away from me, can you?
No, of course.
You legitimately might be the last Australian person to score 100 at six. I'm not even sure if you did. I'm just guessing that you did at one point.
But well, it's the only place I batted. So. Yeah.
I mean, like Matthew Wade just bulk runs for a couple of seasons. It's got to be satisfying. For a guy as well, you scored thousands of runs in first-class cricket before getting a chance for Australia. Got to be satisfying as well to see Matt Wade, you know, plan the runs in Shield cricket for a couple of seasons, then do the job in the first Ashes test match.
We've seen it before. Bucky Rogers did the same. Remember a couple of years ago, he kind of came in the side as an established, more mature player, had a really good couple of years, a couple of good Ashes. Nothing wrong with Wade, you know, he's done everything he can. What has he made, like 1,700 runs?
That's right, yeah.
And walked in and made 100, so good on him, mate. It's good to see him kind of fight back. It just shows us guys that have had a bit of a taste at Test cricket, they get the boot, but, you know, they can come back in and have another go at it.
What do you think about that? What do you think about the new meritocracy of Australian cricket, like actually selecting people based on data and results?
And character, like character being nice. Yeah.
Yeah, well, has that not happened before, or...?
No, being selected was based on your rig,
your chest diameter, bicep circumference.
How much you looked over other people's shoulders when you talked to them, stuff
is
like that.
Like a Michael Stoinis? Big
and you called him Michael Stoinis. No, you've outfitted him. Don't pretend
him, he's dead.
All right, well, so we've ended Stoinis' career. We'll wrap this up quickly. Just as the sun... just starts to set beautifully in this dappled soft light of Newcastle. I can see why you've come to set up here. I have to say, like, English people, England cricket, they know how to do club cricket. I know that club cricket in both Australia and the UK is it, you know, has a few question marks over participation, etc. But people here do know how to play cricket and how to actually get people involved, right? I mean, like nights like tonight are a long way from the syringe-filled fields of Western Sydney, 50 k's from the airport. Harsh on Western Sydney, I should say. But isn't this beautiful?
It is. It's lovely. And what a night for tonight.
Yeah, we'll see what we say tonight. But anyway, well, that was...
Everyone's prepaid, so...
Yeah, I think so. Well, anyway, Marcus Stoinis. Marcus North, thanks so much for coming along and chatting with us on the podcast. And obviously, we'll speak more tonight.
Pleasure, lads. Cheers.
I don't play cricket for results. I don't come to take wickets, score runs, or win games. I play cricket to look good. Rigs, chests, pipes, circuits, salads. This is my domain. So when I hit the sheds, I need to radiate success. That's why I use Chop King Cologne by TGC. With a blend of the finest handcrafted English willow and Kookaburra Red King leather, Chop King Cologne lets me radiate cricket. Whatever the ground, whatever the circuit. Chop King Cologne, the new fragrance for men by TGC. Reek of runs without hitting them.
Hashtag Ask TGC. This gentleman, this one starts off straight away by Tom Collin, who says, "Dear Grey Cricketer, I was wondering if you could help me with some of my deep-seated psychological issues. I know I should probably see a counsellor, but talking to three blokes on the internet is cheaper. I was born in 1995, which meant I spent my formative years as a young child watching Australia dominate. I love every second of it. Like many young kids, I bleed green and gold. I still remember dancing in my living room with my dad after Australia won the 2003 World Cup by thumping India, but then something changed. I can't point to a single event, but as I got older, my love for Australian cricket started to diminish. Being a somewhat sensitive person, I found that I didn't like their overly aggressive attitude and frequent episodes of ugly behaviour, epitomised by Brad Haddin giving Martin Guptill a send-off for being too nice. This situation has become so serious that I now find myself actively rooting for the old enemy. So much so that I felt immense satisfaction watching England put Australia to the sword in the World Cup semi-final. My question is this: what is wrong with me? Am I just a self-hating leftist cuck? And what should I do to rediscover my love for the Australian team? Yours in a complicated and still unresolved love for cricket, Tom."
Yeah, like self-loathing of your nation when you observe kind of behaviours that you don't think are quite in line with your own values, mm-hmm. is natural and logical and rational, mm-hmm. Right? They're the decisions, the leaps of a rational person. However, it is your country, and to decide, I don't mind struggling with the way Australia's behaved, mm-hmm. a little bit, but to take the leap to support or want England to win, that's problematic on a psychological level. You know, when you hear, just generally, and this rule is hard, this is a hardly bound rule, and there's no exceptions, changing teams in sport is wrong.
Mm-hmm. You can never admit a mistake in life. And when you choose something, a team especially, that's yours for life. You've got to own that shit. And no matter if they don't win a premiership for 20 years, 30 years, that becomes part of your identity. And you have to live that every day of your life.
I think Tom wants to be won back. Like, that's what he wants. And ultimately, like, he is being hurt by Australia and the Australian cricket team. He didn't like what Brad Haddin did to Martin Guptill, the nice guys of world cricket.
Which is a fine and logical and rational.
Well, that's what sandpaper conclusion. Basically came down to, right? It wasn't so much the sandpaper itself. It was the Australian reaction to sandpaper was that we'd been cunts for 40 years and people had just had enough. They'd had enough of it. And then, you know, Smith, Warner and Bancroft carried the crime of people for four decades beforehand and they got banned for a year. So, like, but Tom here, Tom is like, Tom wants this new age Australia where, like, we're nice, we treat people well, we respect the opposition, but we still win things.
But where is he now? But with this evolution or revolution that's going on under Langer, with the earthing and the cults and the Isaiah quotes and whatnot, and you know the Eternity magazine articles and
he's probably stopped paying attention. because he also likes a winning team, and England have just won the World Cup. Yeah. So what it's come down to is actually Tom just likes winning
but
teams.
The problem, because when this is a problem with changing sports teams.
Yes.
Because if those teams that you originally left for problems that you saw at the time change, are you going to jump back on? And do they want you back?
Was it like, you know, with the NBA, for example, a lot of people don't support teams, they support players.
Well, this is right.
So you can follow a player when they move around. Unfortunately, cricket, you can't move around unless you're just a T20 fan.
You can with names and numbers now.
Well, names and numbers you can.
They allow you to follow
players.
That's
fair.
Yeah.
But
that's why I went from New Zealand to, you know, England when Stokes moved.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because when he moved from a young age, I was like, well, I'm not having any of this anymore.
Yeah. When I saw Route 66, I was like, oh, that's clever.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy the jersey.
Yeah. All right, lads, this one comes from Anonymous.
Always like the anonymous ones.
G'day, lads. Recently, my best mate got a girlfriend after having about 5 years passed since his last relationship. Mm. I thought it would be a nice idea to invite her along to paintball on the weekend and she could meet the friendship circle.
Mm.
Prior to the event, a group chat was established and she introduced herself over Messenger by posting an old embarrassing photo of me in which I dressed up as a Jedi for an event. Mm. She got good laughs and the boys really got around her and I felt my high social standing deteriorating beneath my feet. I took it on the chin. The following day, I decided to act childishly and change the group photo to a photo of them both hooking up at a ball in spite and as an act of revenge in an attempt to regain my social capital. However, I was only met with questions of why and several full stops. I attempted to explain myself, but the hole only kept getting deeper. It now appears that she has assumed the role of the new alpha in the group that everyone looks up to in any respect and standing.
Funny if she presumed it.
We did write presumed. Any respect and standing I had in the group that I'd built up over the years had been shattered. Choppers, is there any way I can come back from this one and regain any sort of social capital, or should I return my back on this group of people immediately and return to playing cricket where I'll find similar beta males struggling like myself and make new friends? Kind regards, Anonymous Burner Account.
I think this is actually great symmetry for what's going on with, like, you know, the sledging of Ben Stokes and the sledging of, like, Smith, Warner, Bancroft in the mass sphere of crowds.
Mm, okay.
So I think, like, Sandpaper especially has, like, given people in crowds to consistently get it wrong.
Mm.
And, like, and by that I mean just, like, just taking it a bit too far. Like, the Smith crying stuff is, like, a really interesting reaction to just, like, how seeing Steve Smith cry has made you feel, and you're going, well, I'm going to use that to...
We saw you crying on the telly.
That was the worst moment of that person's life, and I'm going to use that against him. Mm. I'm not sure why, but I'm going to. Mm. And so, like, and the alpha in the situation of this anonymous question is just like, well, Steve Smith's alpha the fuck out of you by just having the match of his life. So can you resume the alpha status? Just admit you got it wrong and just move on with it and just, like, just don't use, you know, don't use that necessarily.
Yeah, like from the hard political comms perspective, you need a new news story.
Yep.
Like, you need, don't keep poking that bear. You're in quicksand. You lost that battle straight away, you got hammered straight away, and if you keep fighting, you will just sink further, especially when it's a new girlfriend in a friendship circle where most nice people will welcome her and support her, and you'll be hammered because you can take it.
Yep.
But you've actually, this anonymous person has actually taken umbrage at this and tried to fight back.
Mm.
Like, you've tried to fight back a new person in a group, a female, through alpha behaviour. You deserve to have lost your status off the back of that. But from a political comms perspective, change your story.
Isn't the girlfriend though is alpha as fuck, because she's like, yeah, I'll meet all your friends at paintball. Yeah. We're like, you're never looking your best at paintball. And I couldn't imagine what it's like as a female. Like, you want to be looking your absolute pinnacle, putting you in, like, basically a bag. Your hair's not ideal. I'm thinking from my perspective now,
of course,
as well.
Yeah.
And it's like you got paintballs flying at your head, you know, paint everywhere. Like some sort of Dali festival.
But what a way to announce yourself to a new friendship circle, winning at paintball.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, 1998, alpha, apparently, in this friendship circle.
Yeah.
But maybe he should just go and find a new... friendship circle's easy to find. Can you just go and put it on Gumtree?
Leave the friendship circle. Yeah.
Looking for a new friendship circle, Gumtree.com.
Yeah.
That's where he needs to go.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something kind... There is a backhanded compliment in here, Anonymous, that the girlfriend felt that you were a good and solid, safe target when coming into the group. And then you may have also, without meaning to, advanced her status as well. So you have kind of done her a favour if you want to spin it that way. You know, often the person who is targeted in these groups, unless they're just total beta cuck, Often the person targeted is the person targeted because they can take it.
Yeah.
You know, they have enough social capital that they can take it. At least that's what I tell myself when I get abused. Okay, Will writes in, hashtag AskTJC, say, afternoon choppers, presuming a lot there, some years ago at a cricket festival amongst some leading private schools. Full stop. Okay, this guy can't write. Being the worst team there and having been pumped by every team, I lost my head by the last day and put myself at slip despite our attack being carted everywhere. I'm worried about this, just the word construction. Mm. From there, I thought it would be wise to just call everyone a cunt, including some young current test cricketers. Nothing witty. That's right. Not surprised. Just being a dreadful bloke.
Oh, my God.
Fast forward 2 years to university, freshers week in halls. Okay. I walk across the corridor to meet some new people. In classic fashion, there was the exchange of private schools. However, when the name of my school was brought up, a voice came up and said, I remember playing against them. Some bloke sat at slip and called me a cunt. I hate saying this. For 50 overs. Frozen in my plight for social capital, I kept quiet. But did I miss an opportunity to alpha the fuck out of this guy and own up to it?
Yeah. Great stuff.
We have gone on to become friends, however, I have been on the back foot since. Does a good bloke front up and take responsibility for comments made in the field, misjudged or otherwise? Cheers, Will. You got problems, Will.
It is... it's disconcerting to think that, you know, everything that you say on a cricket field could come back to hurt you in 5 years down the track, for example.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, it's like posting something on the internet, you know, it's on there forever. So everything you say on a cricket field, someone is harbouring that knowledge and then may be able to use it against you in the future.
Yeah.
That concerns me as a cricketer.
Did you guys sledge much when you played? I can't imagine you guys sledging much. No. Not at all.
No.
I liked, I never abused players. Like, I just, but there was often, I would say things, but I'd like to think that they were sort of in the English language beyond just abuse.
I'd laugh when someone did something shit or
got
yuck.
Out of something.
I mean, I was, you know, sometimes you'd get sledged, but I never really actively.
Yeah,
throw in like a you know one mistake here or like a wow, you know, someone plays a miss, wow,
yeah,
you know,
oh my, was
that's
12s?
Not a sledge.
No, so really no. Answers that's about as far as I went. What about yourself? You a big sledger?
I
didn't mind a word.
No, I brought plenty of energy to the field, lads. Yeah. Plenty of chat. No, I
sort of stuff. What was your style?
I actually wrote this question. I reckon I sledge until I was about maybe 19 or 20. And then I don't know why I stopped. There wasn't like a moment where I was just like, well, I just need to stop doing this. Like nothing happened. It was just, the older I got, the more it was just like my words on the field that I was saying to these people said more about me than it did about them.
Yeah.
And I kept playing for 10 years after that. So
did you find when you were a sledger, like was it just to interview a sledger now?
Yeah.
Was it appreciated? Now that you've come out the other side, was it appreciated by your teammates? Like, oh, he's the attack dog in the side. Did you feel like I'm valued for the fact that I will single somebody out who's batting and, you know, swear at them for
a little
while?
I was basically told that I should be sledging more, and I didn't really enjoy it. But so then, like, my sledging just became, I would like to sledge my own teammates kind of thing, because, like, all I wanted to do, like, in my entire cricket career was I'd make other people laugh. And so, you know, now we do this. I forget where the point of this is, but...
That's right. I feel this has turned into a Denton interview with Dave Hughes.
That's right. You know? That's right. But yeah, Will's got serious issues. Does he front up to his friends that he did it? It's a weird thing to
go back
to.
How did he become mates with this bloke now?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he's out of it.
He's had some growth in terms of like he's no...
But he's on the back foot with this bloke, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Like everything he's saying is just absolutely...
He owes him money.
Yeah. Loan shark, just can't make those monthly
he's
payments.
He's still living in the alpha prism
and
is writing into an internet account about what to do.
I think like ultimately...
It's good. Funny that you can be on the back foot in a friendship.
That is funny. Maybe it is reaching. It's hard when you sort of, if you grow up in this kind of cosseted private school system where life really is like without you even knowing sometimes, just subconsciously one big alpha hierarchy power play.
Yep.
And you just, that's how you live. That's your reflex to everything. Mm. He might be trying, to be fair to Will, have been harsh on, he might be trying to reach out by writing into an internet account the same way people run to Women's Day.
I think like he's probably like a young guy's world, like I was when I was sledging. You're just like, you just grow out of it, you know, if you got a bit about you, I think is the point.
Okay.
Anyway, question answered, maybe a little bit. All right, that's in this podcast from a hotel room in Newcastle.
It's a B&B.
We'll be in Leeds and Manchester next couple of days. Tickets online at greatcricketer.club. Yes, we've been offered by our own network who bought the .com.
Still haven't given it back yet.
Yeah. Still haven't given it back yet. Just trying to figure it out. We're trying to figure out how hard can it be.
Well, someone who you know used to work there bought the domain and he doesn't work there anymore, so it's hard to track him down.
Almost impossible.
Dodging his emails. It's a whole thing.
It's kind of a compliment, though, isn't it? Like, we were just told, someone owns greatcricketer.com and you have to pay to find out. Then you find out that it's people that you have worked with.
Yep.
And you go, can we have it back now? It's like, we'll come back to you on that. Yeah. So when we started working with them, they purchased it without telling us. So
basically, they're waiting for us to get fucking enormous and then we'll have to go to them and ask for the .com and have to pay a six-figure sum, which we will.
I hope this conversation was worth it because now we're not working with them ever again. Saying this.
We haven't mentioned any names here.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to do a podcast at the end of every test match and before every test match. So we'll be back before the Lords test match.
A preview.
Couple have written in and said, well, where's the podcast? I don't think we ever released
Sorry.
I can't remember what day we did podcast anymore. I don't know what day it is at the moment. We're obviously all jet-lagged and tired. Anyway, thanks to Marcus North for coming on the show. Thanks, as ever, for tuning in to the podcast. We'll see you next time on The Great Cricketer.